This phrase, good girl, is deep in us. When I think about what it means when we say it without thinking, what I heard when I heard it as a girl was, good job doing what I told you to do. You're really making my life easier by doing whatever it is that I just asked you to do. It implies that you should blindly listen, blindly follow directions. And these are things that make me really uncomfortable today, knowing that as a survivor, blindly listening, blindly following directions, and listening to adults as the category of people who are to be believed and be trusted. And so when I use the phrase with my daughter, which again, I'm not saying stop or don't or cancel it altogether. What I try to do is define it as I use it. So when I hear myself say it, good girl, Avery, I'm like, okay, Kristen, tell her why you said she's a good girl now so that she understands it's not just because she sat in the chair when you told her to sit in the chair or ate what you told her to eat.
Hello, hello, Blissful Parents. Michelle Abraham, your host here today. I'm here with an awesome guest, Kristen Ray. Kristen, hi, how are you?
So good. So happy it's Friday.
Yay. Happy Friday. Awesome. I'm sure our parents out there are super happy it's Friday as well. I know I certainly am. Let me tell our audience a little bit more about you, Kristen. You have such an incredible story and you come with so much love and so much admiration from a mutual friend of ours, which is how we connected. So I'm super excited to bring you on and share. We're kind of talking today about reframing the word, the good girl, and how that was something in our childhood that was, you know, got to be the good girl. So we're going to reframe that. And before we do, let me just share a little bit more about you and about your journey. So among many things, Kristen's a wife, a mother, a writer, a speaker, an author, a saleswoman, a daughter, podcaster, activist, sports lover, and so much more. So she lives in Michigan, and she has her work has seen her journey through writing a children's book. And we're going to talk about that in a second. It's called Fearless. In her blogging, and she founded a trade organization for women, writing sports. She writes a sports column and has multiple podcasts. So her most recent project, which is the book I just mentioned, Fearless, debuted number one in the children's short story category on Amazon. So congrats, Kristen, that's really exciting. And you have a daughter yourself?
Yes, I have a little girl named Avery. She is newly 3 years old, and we're just recently embracing all the things that go along with a three-year-old little girl, which I think most parents can understand.
Absolutely. No kidding. Yeah. That was, you'll have to connect with one of our podcast guests. We just had Devin Kuntzman. She's so great at the toddlerhood stuff. And it was great. We had her on Blissful Parenting. We're talking about toddlerhood stuff, but it's all that stuff that's still relevant for our school age kids that we have on Blissful Parenting, which is awesome. So let's talk about you, Kristen. You tell us about the book Fearless. Well, how did it come about and what's it all about?
Yeah. So, as a survivor of childhood sexual trauma, which is something just kind of sounds dark to start with, but I wanted to let people know where some of my intention comes from. Mm-hmm. And so as a survivor and finding out when I was pregnant that I was going to have a girl, you know, I had some mixed feelings about what that meant and how to raise a girl that could be maybe wiser or more protected than our generation of girls and women. And what I did when I became pregnant with her was start writing down some things that I wanted to intentionally teach her. Mm-hmm. And there's things we teach our kids unintentionally, which, you know, the way we move, the way we talk when we're not thinking clearly and those kind of things. And so I wanted to make sure that these things were done with intention and with focus and with purpose. And as I started looking through what I had been writing down, I realized that one of the ways I could hold myself accountable for using intention with these things was to just put it on paper and put it on record. And then COVID started and I thought, gosh, if I ever was going to do it, now's the time to do it. So I worked with a really great illustrator who happened to be a student at the time. And she's actually an art therapy student. So she had an interest in wanting art to become a method of therapy for people like survivors. Mm-hmm. So I self-published on Amazon. It's been really successful. We debuted at number one, like you said, in that category. And the moment was never to make a bunch of money, but to just give my daughter what I wanted for her. And the message to the book, really, for the parents out there, I designed hopefully to be relevant at any age. The message is not necessarily to be without fear, but to not let the fears that we come up with every day hold us back. Mm. And I also tried to have the message to the reader as well. So as I'm a woman reading this potentially to my kid, there's some really tactical things for the kids. But if you think about what the book says metaphorically, it's really encouraging to women who may be struggling at work or need encouragement in other ways. So hopefully the message is encouraging both to kids and to the adult reader, because we know there are books out there that our kids love that we do not love to read. So I'm hoping this is not one of those.
And certain cartoon characters and episodes that we do not like to hear either. Right?
Amen.
No, yes. I know. And congratulations. Thank you for writing a book that is not only educational, it's inspiring, and it serves a purpose other than talking about poop or something like that.
You know, we have enough of those.
Some of those books. Yeah. I was like, oh gosh, don't need any more of those books in the world. Something that's more powerful, inspiring, motivating. So thank you so much for writing something of value, huge value. So after being a survivor of childhood sexual trauma and you're healing from that yourself as a parent, that must pose some challenges as you're healing from your own journey, but also trying to navigate raising a child of your own. Can you share a bit about that with us?
Yeah, that's really what inspired me to start my blog. There are some really unique things that survivors go through, especially when, for me, my daughter is about the age where my abuse started. So these things can be really triggering. I mean, there are days that I can't bathe her because it's too triggering for me. So there are different things throughout normal parenting, whatever normal means, right? That I need to remove myself from until I have the time to take a moment, or different words that trigger me in a way that I'm choosing not to use when I'm raising her. So I felt pretty alone in that I don't know anybody outward who said to me, me too, and I'm parenting through it at the same time. So the blog is a way to hopefully give someone else who's going through the same thing a peer without having to raise their hand if they're not comfortable, and hopefully bringing a topic that is emotional, often too dark for people to feel comfortable talking about, into a place where at some point maybe the numbers start to fall because we're okay talking about it now. But I know it's hard to listen to, and I know it's dark, but it's really important that we start normalizing these conversations.
Absolutely. And thank you for your bravery for leading those conversations, because I think they're so important. And I can imagine that there's so many triggers that happen when trying to raise a kid. I mean, for parents that even didn't go through that, there's lots of triggers of our own journeys, and it's hard to be a parent when you are still healing from things in your past. So any suggestions for our parents out there that are also experiencing some similar experiences to you?
Read. I mean, there are a couple of books that have helped me really feel like I'm not alone, and what I'm going through is pretty normal. And I hate that word normal, but maybe expected for some of the things that we've gone through. The Body Keeps the Score is one that really helped me understand. And this, what I learned from that book could be anywhere from just the expected things that happen to a lot of kids during childhood, and all the way to some really traumatic things that kids go through with deaths of parents and abuse and all of this. Right. And it really helps you understand how more than just in your mind you're affected. And it helps you understand intellectually how to deal with some of the things that we go through as survivors, whether it's of trauma or, you know, just the normal adolescent upbringings that we've had.
Yeah, those are great. That's a great suggestion. And what's the name of the book again? Can you say it again?
the body keeps the score.
Body keeps the
and,
score.
And forgive me, the amazing doctor, I believe, that wrote it has a name that I don't want to butcher, but it's easily searchable.
Awesome. Yeah, I'm sure it is. That's great. Now, and today we wanted to talk a little bit about reframing the word the good girl. So share a little bit about what's your thoughts behind that? That was something we were all told, be a good girl, or be a good boy. That was very common when we were growing up in our generation. So why is that not necessarily a great thing to lead with today to our kids, and how can we change it?
Well, first I want to say, I'm not sitting up here saying that I don't say it to my daughter. I do. That's how ingrained it is in us, that even someone who's trying to not say it or say it differently still does it all the time.
Automatic. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, we're still called this. I've heard adult women referred to it in the workplace. I mean, this phrase good girl is deep in us. Mm-hmm. And for me, when I started hearing what I think we mean by it is when I started asking myself, do I want to continue to have this in my family's vocabulary, at least in the way that it exists? When I think about what it means to, when we say it, without thinking it, what I think of, and when I heard it as a girl was, good job doing what I told you to do. Good job listening. Good job following directions. You're really making my life easier, you know, for me by doing whatever it is that I just asked you to do. It kind of implies that you should, you know, blindly listen, blindly believe, blindly follow directions. And these are things that make me really uncomfortable today, knowing that as a survivor, blindly listening, blindly following directions, and listening to adults as adults, as a category of people who are to be believed and be trusted. That's those safe. Things make me really uncomfortable. And so when I use the phrase with my daughter, which again, I'm not saying stop or don't or cancel it altogether. What I try to do is reframe it. And by reframing, I'm trying to define it as I use it. Mm-hmm. So when I hear myself say it, good girl, Avery, good girl. I'm like, okay, Kristen, now define, tell her why you said she's a good girl now, so that she understands it's not just because she sat in the chair when you told her to sit in the chair or ate what you told her to eat. So I say things like, good girl, Avery. And then I switch my mind and I say, Avery, what I meant by that is that I love that you just helped me clean up. Mm-hmm. Avery, what I meant by that was that it was really brave when you raised your hand in class today, when you were supposed to be quiet, but you really had to go potty. Great job. So I'm trying to, when I say it, also tell her exactly what in that moment made me elicit the response of good girl. Mm-hmm. So I'm challenging me and my husband to reframe, define, maybe say it a little less and challenge ourselves to say something different. But just steer away from that being our only phrase for when she's achieved something.
Right. Yeah, that's great. So it's so automatically ingrained in us that really that's great to just question it and think of a different way of talking. And I was talking to another podcast in another podcast episode, we were talking about how, you know, sometimes like when we say something like say careful or whatever, we're commanding something that maybe the kids don't really understand anyways. You know, it's not specific enough. It's too vague. And then they can't grasp the concept of good, what good girl even means. So, I love the way that you're challenging yourself to kind of, even if you are saying it to kind of follow it up with something that's more concrete and understandable for a 3-year-old, especially, or a school age kid, any kids at any age that really understand what you mean by that. So it's not about the achievement either. It's about the process.
Mm-hmm. And I think these conversations, and you know, some of the other things I'm trying to reframe is like, again, I hear myself say it. I hear my parents say it. I hear my husband say it. She's 3. No. And their initial reaction is, don't tell me no. And I understand why that's the reaction. And I also understand why she's saying no. But these kinds of compliance insistent things that we say are scary to me. And I want to really have the conversation about qualifiers. If you say them, but then qualify after. We need to release ourselves from the blanket statements. And like, depending on the source, around 90% of child abuse victims know the perpetrator in some way. So if they're already in their life, we've as parents implied that they're trusted adults in some way. So we've got to stop saying that all adults are, should be heeded and should always be followed and things like that. And we need to give our kids the tools to decipher between the moments when, yes, don't cross the street. That should be heeded every time, because in those moments, we're trying to keep you safe. But in the moments where you need to listen to your head and your heart and your body before you just heed something, just because an adult says it, they can't do that on their own without us ingraining the ability to decipher between those two things. So many of kids who undergo what I underwent are young enough that you can't just assume that they get the difference. Mm-hmm. So telling them the difference between when to question things, how it feels when we should question things in our body, in our heart, in our brain. These are the things that when I talk about intentional parenting in my blog, I'm trying to do myself and then maybe help others too.
What you said about, you know, teaching our kids to pay attention to the signals in our bodies and, you know, when something feels good, when it doesn't. And that's really, I think that's really key there too. You know, teaching them to keep giving them the skills that we maybe didn't have as kids, to kind of make those assessments, internally, even when it's like, are you full? You're not full. You don't have to eat every food on your, all the food on your plate, right? Like there's a reason that not because they're picky eaters, but maybe they have an allergy to something, or, you know, they're pretty intuitive. I love that. It's getting them to listen to their bodies and learning those assessments themselves.
And when they're three, it comes back at you because she says, "Mommy, my body is saying that I don't need to eat my mini wheats." And so like, there's a give and take with this. But when the first time I heard her say, "But mommy, my body is saying," I was like, okay, in this instance, she's using it to get what she wants, but she hears me.
Yeah.
So those are the moments when it feels like a win. Mm-hmm. And what I heard you say reminded me of something that I was dealing with lately. Another one of the things that I think will help our kids be safer and protect themselves more is emotional intelligence. Mm-hmm. And recently I had a conversation with an adult that I love and respect and is part of my family. And they didn't want, after a really in-depth emotional conversation, for my daughter to see them upset. I can't go out there. I don't want her to see me like this. And I looked at them and I said, hey, I want my daughter to know what it looks like to feel sad, to feel upset, to feel uncomfortable. And I'm okay. I'm okay if she sees you like this, because when she says, you know, are you sad? You can say, yes, I am. You recognize that correctly. And I'm going to be okay. And that's what I've done with my daughter. When I come out of a therapy session and I look like I've been crying for an hour, it's because I have. Mm-hmm. It's hard work. But when she says, "Mommy, are you okay?" I don't say, "Yep, I'm okay. I'm fine." It looks like I've been crying, Avery, because I have, and I'm okay, and I'll be okay in a few minutes. You know, I don't make her have to be the one that makes me okay, because that's a whole nother topic. and I let her know that I'll be okay, but yes, I am sad right now, and it's okay to be sad.
That's great. Interesting. Yeah. Interesting how sometimes we want to hide those emotions from our kids where, you know, and I think that goes along the lines with a parenting and you know, when we've made a mistake parenting and we recognize that, and if we can share that in front of our kids, let them see that we've made a mistake, it helps them learn. And I think we want to hide that and, you know, not share that with them, or not share that we're upset, or, you know. And I think that you bring up a really great point there. That's really important to share those things, all the pieces, because it helps them learn how to navigate it themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. If I kept saying, no, I'm okay, when I'm not okay, she's going to ask herself, gosh, am I getting this wrong? Maybe this isn't what someone that's sad looks like. And I want her to be able to speak to me about something that may not feel right to her in ways that she has words to use. So if I take those words by telling her, no, that's not sad, no, that's not angry, how do I expect her to tell me what she's feeling and seeing when she needs to?
That's a great point. I love that. After we've just come out of the holidays season, something I was thinking about over the holidays is how do we navigate the, you know, the forcing our kids to give everyone a hug or attention. I know that's a big one. And it's become more and more apparent over the last few years that that's something that a lot of parents are now really, really stepping up and changing the way that's been traditionally done in families.
So that was something that I've seen more and more out there in the media and in podcasting and in all the places that, you know, intentional parents go. But it's interesting because that's one of the first things I said to my group of parents, and I have a really supportive group of parents and in-laws, even before she was born, was let's be clear. She is welcome to hug and kiss whoever she feels she wants to hug and kiss when they get there, when they leave, when they give her a present. But she will never, ever be required to do so. This can be really hard for grandparents, really hard. And it's been something I've addressed with different members of our family more than once because it's A, it's instinct, and B, sometimes it hurts. It hurts me sometimes when she doesn't want to say goodbye or give them that hug and kiss. But long-term, it's so much better for her to know that she chooses who she makes physical contact with and that societally and socially speaking, you don't owe anyone to show gratitude or to show love in any specific way, especially when you don't want to. So I love that conversation. I think the more we have it out loud, the more we will loosen that expectation. But that is definitely one, I think, Michelle, that you can say was placed on us and in our generation.
Absolutely. Yeah. There's some, it's interesting, you know, we didn't maybe recognize, or I just certainly didn't recognize a lot of these things until I started having kids and being like, oh, wait a second. I'm like, that was maybe not such a great idea. Anything else that you've discovered with your parenting in the last few years that you've shared with your audience and on your blog that you want to share with us today?
Yeah. So secrets is a hot topic for me right now. She's at this age where she's just going to pre-K and everybody's probably at school whispering and, you know, telling their friends things and not telling other people things. And so we at home have really, even before she started school, tried to eliminate secret telling. Again, as a survivor, I was told, you know, this isn't for anyone to share, but the people in this room. And not only was there direct messaging about keeping a secret, but lots of things imply keeping secrets. And so in our house, there are no secrets. When Christmas comes and her dad wants to say, hey, don't tell mommy what her gift is. It's a secret. We've tried to say, mommy's gift is a surprise that we know and that mommy will get to see soon on Christmas Day. But we try to keep secrets, especially obviously and very intentionally, even sometimes at night when we're just talking before bed. You know, baby, it's not okay for an adult to ask a kid to keep a secret. Does that make sense? Do you have any questions about that? And would you feel comfortable telling mommy if an adult came to you and said, I have a secret that you can't tell your mommy and your daddy? And she's three, so this could go way over her head. But the longer I do it, for the more often I do it, I feel like it will become a comfortable thing for her to talk about and a comfortable thing for her to bring up in the future should she encounter it.
Yeah, and you bring up a really great point of like making our kids feel comfortable with sharing with us. Any strategies that you have for our parents today around that, even more so? I think you shared obviously how you're doing that around the secrets. Obviously like that communication between our kids and us as they get older, sometimes it shuts down a little. They don't want to share everything, but you know, how do you keep those conversations going? I find personally at bedtime right before bed is like when their mouths open up and all the things come out, I'm like, why didn't you say that earlier? You know, so how do we keep those conversations and the communication open so our kids feel comfortable sharing?
So I can't sit here and say know how to do it with an older kid because I just have her. But what I have done is in bedtime is our time too. We're sitting in the rocker, the lights off. We're just quietly moving softly. And I say, hey, is there anything you want to talk about? What do you want? And most of the time it's rainbow cats. But a couple of times it has been stuff I haven't heard before. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I said to her very early on was, listen, there is nothing you can tell me or daddy that I will not believe. Mm-hmm. Now, I know as an intellectual adult, if she comes home and says, the teacher dyed her hair blue in front of me at school and then did a handstand on her desk. Mm-hmm. Internally, I'm going to question the truth of that. But I'm also going to ask myself, what do you think she saw and what could have really happened? And ask myself what needs digging into and what doesn't. But she doesn't need to know that I'm going to analyze what she says for truth or non-truth. She just needs to know that what she says, I take it face value, so that she never doesn't tell me something because she thinks I might not believe it.
That's great.
And that's one of the things I think I experienced as a kid was, gosh, is what I'm going to say if I say it going to be believed? And I don't want my daughter to question that.
Powerful. Yeah, that's great. And I think that that advice goes across all parents of kids of all ages. Mm-hmm. So that's a really great one. Oh my gosh, we're running short on time and I have so much more things to ask you and talk to you about. But before we do let you go, is there anything that you want to share with us that you think would be helpful? You shared so many amazing things already, that anything that's been really helpful for you that you feel like our parents at home might want to hear?
I would just say that we've all been through something, right? Maybe our listeners have been through some trauma like me, or maybe it's just the things that we hold on to from childhood that didn't go well for us. I would just say in our parenting decisions, ask ourselves, who are we hearing from in our brain? Are we hearing from the trauma or the traumatized kid? Or are we hearing from our instinct? I will admit that I haven't yet in some moments learned to clarify, is my mother talking or is my child traumatized child talking? And so I would just encourage parents to listen to what voice are they hearing and make sure it's the one they want to hear from in that moment, but never to discount either voice. And at some point my trauma will merge with my instinct again. But I think right now it's really helpful to understand who I'm listening to and why it might be talking to me.
That's really helpful. And, I was thinking of something while you were saying that. And I think that, you know, as parents, we have a difficult job of discerning, like you were saying, between what may have been something that we experienced and also then like holding our kids so tight that because of something that happened to us, that we don't want them to also experience. I know, you know, I hear some things about school or bullying or things that are happening at school and I go, it triggers me right back to like things that happened to me on the playground. I'm like, ooh, that took me till my 20s to get over that. Or, you know, I still feel that way or, you know, so how do we not hold on so tight to not let them have their own experiences?
So that's one of the things I concern myself all the time. One of my biggest anxieties is, am I putting my stuff on her? And I think there's a fine line between creating a different or stronger person than you were, and then like making them too cautious, overly cautious. And so what I've done is make sure that I have a really honest husband who can tell me when he thinks I'm overdoing it. And I speak to a professional. My therapist is a trauma therapist, but she also has worked in child trauma. So she can tell me in child development, she can tell me, Kristen, maybe that's not the rational way to do it. And I'm open to hearing it. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that when I hear the hard things that I look like I want to hear it, but I do want to hear it. And I am working on how I absorb when maybe I have gone too far or I've taken it too far, I'm being too cautious. So I don't always want to hear, I want to hear, but I don't always hear it with the most grace, I will admit. But I would just have the people in your life who can be honest with you.
Yeah.
And be open to hearing their honesty.
And like know your past traumas and also be able to discern like,
Yes,
that's great advice. I love it. Well, Kristen, it's been so great chatting with you. Can you share with our audience where they can find out more information about you, your blog, reach out to you?
Absolutely. So my name is Kristen Ray Ray. My middle name is the same as my last name, but spelled differently. So go on kristinrayray.com. That's KristinRayray.com. And you can log from there. You can get directly to my blog and you can get directly to my book if you're interested in that, or just learn more about me and what I'm up to.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Kristen, for spending this time with us. Blissful parents, go out there and have a fabulous week. We'll see you again next week. Take care.
Thank you for listening to the Blissful Parent Podcast. For complete transcriptions of this show, as well as helpful links to resources mentioned in this episode, please visit our website at theblissfulparent.com.